There we go. Had some issues with my control panel here.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Let's Get Pairing. I'm your host, Trip, as always, here with my co-host, Dennis, as always. Today, we're going to be smoking the Solis from La Florida Minicana. We'll get into that. We'll tell you what the deal is with the cigar, what we're pairing with it, and we'll get into how it is. But first, grab yourself a cigar, grab yourself a drink. Let's get pairing. Whatever. All right, and we're back. As always, I'm your host, Trip, here in the Casa de Monte Cristo studio in sunny Florida. Weather's been great this week, man. Like, it was 89 degrees yesterday.
Oh, hell no.
Crazy. Uh-uh.
I've come
to actually kind of like the warmer weather.
I don't know, man.
It takes a while to get used to, but you get used to it.
At night, it's nice. I like it at night. I would say that much.
Yeah, sometimes. I feel like it's almost worse at night because then it's just hot and muggy. Like, it feels like it gets more humid at night to me. I don't know.
Maybe. Maybe with the swamp. The swamp gases are rising better.
Swamp gases rising up.
Those gator farts, the worst.
Man, I have seen some gators recently. Just on the side of the road. It's been surprising.
But you've seen a couple of real snappers out there.
Oh, yeah. all right, so the cigar we're smoking tonight is the LFD Solis. Come on, there we go. The Solis from La Florida Minicana. Great looking wrapper on this cigar. I feel like I say that every week, but we've had some good looking cigars in the past couple months.
It's been a trend. Agreed. Mm-hmm.
So we chose this cigar.
It takes a lot for a cigar to look like shit, to be fair.
Yeah, that's true. Even a bad cigar can look pretty good as long as the wrapper isn't like all mottled and fucked up. All right, so the reason I chose this cigar, I put it on our docket, as it were, is because this was Cigar Coop's number 5 cigar of the year, and it was one that I had no experience with. So I figured I'd try it out. So that was his number 5 for 2023. I believe it came out in 2022. I didn't put that in my notes, but I have all the wrapper info and all that. So the wrapper on this is Ecuadorian Sun-Grown Habano. The binder is Ecuadorian Sumatra. The filler is all from the Dominican Republic, and all of it is from the Gomez family farm, La Florida Minicana's own farms, which is always kind of a nice touch, depending on how their tobacco is. I don't think I've smoked much from their farm, so I can't comment on whether it's awful tobacco or not, but I would venture a guess that it's pretty decent. I lost my notes here. There we go. The size on this is 6.5 by 50, so it's kind of a Toro Extra, almost a Churchill, but not quite there. And it retails for about $13.50. We have just lit it up moments ago, like 3 minutes, and I've been talking most of the time, so I haven't really gotten my my full tasting on yet. What are you thinking? It seems like maybe you're just finishing lighting it, so maybe we should just chat for a little while and enjoy it.
Yeah, I just lit it. I'm trying not to power through it because I don't want to ruin that first, right? The initial 10 minutes is one of those times where I find that I've started to stop smoke as fast purposefully so that I can enjoy the first, as the cigar warms up, it'll change in the first 5 minutes. Pretty noticeable.
Somebody called it a handshake when you're shaking hands with a cigar. When you're just getting to know it. That was some analogy that somebody made.
I like that. I think that sounds reasonable. Yeah.
It sounds very classy. I know that much.
Is it a firm handshake or is it like a gentle handshake?
That's the question.
Is it a caress?
Yeah,
or is it a squeeze? Do you squeeze it or do you caress it?
You got to shake for a minute before you figure
it out. Depends if you're paying by the hour or not, I guess.
Exactly. You get it. Sorry, just shaking hands with my cigar here. Yeah, usually we light a couple minutes early, but we were running just a little late today, so we're kind of doing it live.
It's a daylight savings time, man.
Yeah, man, it messed me up for dinner. Well, so first, last night, I was playing some video game, and at like 1:45, I was like, all right, I should go to bed. I'm just going to finish what I'm doing, and I'm going to bed. And then I looked down at my clock on my computer, and it's 3:15, and I was like, oh, fuck, it was an hour and a half?
Yep.
Holy crap, I got to go to sleep. And then this morning I realized why an hour and a half past so fast is because it was actually 30 minutes. And I'm just stupid.
There seems to be a rise of cardiac issues during the changing of the clocks. Seriously, it seems like a very common statistic coming up now. I don't know if it's true, but who knows?
All right, so starting to get acquainted with this cigar a little bit. I'm getting a little bit of spice, some breadiness. It's different from anything I can think of from La Florida Dominicana. Let me get into I'll just kind of quickly go over the story of this cigar. So this cigar is the first commercial release, they're calling it, from Lito Gomez Jr. So this is, the old man, Lito Gomez's younger son. Everybody is not everybody. A lot of people are pretty familiar with Tony Gomez, who's the older son. One of his first cigars was Lennox. He also did the Chapter One. He's had a few commercial releases. So being that one of his first cigars was Lennox, his younger brother found it fitting to name his first cigar Solace, or Solis. I think it's Solis. Lennox means the night. Solis is kind of from what I could find, it's kind of a last name, but it means the daylight or the sun. I think probably he came up with some names and they were already taken by somebody else, I would guess. But I think this is a fitting name, you know, the light of this versus the dark of Lennox. Kind of a cool theme there, I think. What are you thinking of the cigar so far?
I'm just getting to my first pairing. So nice dusty spice. That's, I think, probably the best way I could put it, is this like lightly toasted bread and dusty spice, almost like I don't want to say cocoa, but it's the same texture of cocoa.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Which is, it's kind of a hard profile to nail down. All right. It's almost like between a cocoa and a cinnamon.
Yeah. And you know what I'm getting? What it reminds me of a little bit is, like, have you ever, you like ginger snaps?
I've snapped a couple ginger.
Have you ever had one of those brands where, like, you eat a ginger snap and it's like intensely spicy?
Yes, I have.
This reminds me of that.
Love those.
Which I love. Yeah. My kids love them too.
Oh yeah. That's a, you know what? I think you nailed it. That's
like it has like that really intense, but very what's the word I'm looking for? Well married, kind of baking spice flavors. And then has like an intense spice to it as well on the finish. Getting to my white first pepper. Pairing a little bit here. Yeah, definitely some white pepper in there. I think a little black pepper, a little red pepper. It's definitely a spicy cigar, but not in the way that like most La Florida Dominicana stuff is. Again, I'm going back to like all the noise, the sound analogies, music analogies. This is a very bright cigar compared to where LFDs are generally pretty dark cigars for me.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, usually I'm used to kind of more of the core flavors being that classic Dominican, very earthy, very mineral. And this has a little more of like that bright spice with a little bit of citrus, those baking spices, those bready notes you talked about. I'm really liking the cigar so far.
On the nose, there's a little floral quality to it. And I say that very loosely because, again, I think I'm now like congested or sick every 3 weeks or so now with, you know, young kids. This is the norm, the reality now. There's always something going around.
It's also just this time of year. Like this time of year.
Well, it's fall, spring.
It's brutal. Yeah. Even here, it was almost 90 degrees the other day and everybody's still getting cold too. It's crazy.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to move on to my first pairing here. We had talked about it last week on Bear's show. Our love of gin, and I said how I almost chose a gin pairing, so I figured I would try it out for this cigar, because to me, I think this is going to pair pretty well, because it's a good mix of flavors while also, it's a good mix of contrasting flavors to most cigars, while being light enough that it's probably not going to overpower anything. All right, so this gin here, look at that cool bottle.
Ooh,
angular.
That's nice.
This is Purity what Gin is that? 34 from Purity Distillery. Purity is based in, I'm going to try to get the pronunciation right. Malmo, Sweden. They were founded in 2010. They focus mostly on their gins and their vodkas, which they have a couple of each. This is their organic gin. They also have a Navy Strength. This is actually, it doesn't, they don't really call it, in some of the marketing, an Old Tom gin, but it does say on the bottle here, Old Tom gin. Craft Nordic Old Tom gin. Bottle number 1041 out of batch number 3. I love when they do that. But I am always curious if every bottle says 1041 in batch 3. And always will and always has.
Probably.
You got to check on the shelf, and I failed to do that. All right, so in 2010, Stefan Magnusson and Thomas Tonnesen started this distillery. Mathias Tonnesen. His family owns it. It's a family-owned distillery in Norway. Stefan is the master distiller, while Mathias is the master blender. They use a handmade column still designed by what they call, in all their marketing, it says renowned engineer. I could not find anything else this guy's ever worked on other than this still.
Interesting.
There were a bunch of articles in Norwegian that maybe, maybe he's very famous there for engineering things. But I couldn't figure out what it was. His name's Leif Nærhammer. And
wow,
they use,
that's a cool name, dude.
Yeah, right. Nærhammer.
Holy
sounds
shit!
Like, it sounds like Nærhammer sounds like a hammer specifically designed to kill, right?
It's not a far hammer; it's a near hammer. I got you. See what you did.
Exactly. They use a handmade column still that was designed by this guy, and they use what they call the purity copper surface distillation, which I think just means that, almost all the surfaces on the inside of the still, regardless of what it's made of on the outside, is lined with copper. So you get a lot of copper contact that they say adds a very high degree of purity to their spirits. I got to fix my focus because it's driving me nuts here. There we go. Every time I look down at my
camera, it was
like just a little blurry. Like I wasn't wearing my glasses. It was confusing me. But yeah, so this is a very interesting distillery. I need to try some of their other stuff. I've heard they may have a whiskey coming at some point. I forgot to mention that this gin, actually, I should have gotten to this in a little bit, but I think they have a whiskey coming anyway. Anyway, on to this Old Tom gin. That's what I wanted to say. Old Tom gin, just as kind of a refresher for anybody who's not familiar with it or has heard of it but doesn't really know what it's all about. Old Tom gin is kind of an old moniker for gin that referred to very low quality gin that needed to have some of that roughness covered up. So generally you would be adding things like lemon juice or anise, or they would just add candied licorice sometimes to the bottles to up the sugar factor and cover up those nasty flavors a little bit. Sometimes they just added straight up sugar to it. This was around the late 1700s, early 1800s, when Old Tom gin was a pretty common style. It was pretty common that if you were ordering gin, you were getting it in Old Tom gin, because there wasn't a lot of reputable gin back in those days. And of course, as with many things that start off that way, people developed a flavor for it. So eventually there were better gins that were not garbage quality rot gut that they would drink in the Old Tom style, because it's what they were used to and they liked it. Around 1900, before Prohibition, really, is where Old Tom gin kind of falls off the map. London dry style gins start to be kind of the more popular style in Europe. For probably 80 or 90 years, gin was not very popular in the U.S. at all. The resurgence worldwide really started in the 80s and 90s when the clear spirits revolution kind of started.
And blenders. Let's not forget the thing that we always try to forget is the 90s era of everything in a blender.
Mm-hmm.
Gin was huge. Vodka came back. A lot of clear spirits had a resurgence back then also.
Yeah, and then kind of gin kind of always, similar to whiskey, kind of has these ebbs and flows. So late 90s, gin was no longer cool because vodka was the in thing. Since then, it's definitely come back a bit.
Definitely.
But Old Tom gin, back to Old Tom gin. Old Tom gin these days doesn't really refer to any particular style. It generally just means a gin that has some extra flavor added, whether that's sweeter, sometimes it's barrel aged, sometimes it's not sweetened at all, but it is barrel aged, sometimes it's not barrel aged like this one, but it's sweetened with something. It's kind of a, it's a very open to interpretation kind of style. There's not very many, there's no regulations around it other than it has to be gin, which means 40% ABV, and actually I think it's 37% or something like that. And it has to have juniper berries. And that's pretty much the only requirement for anything that uses the name gin. Did I miss anything? Because I took notes on all this, and I just did all that off the top of my head. There's one more thing that I forgot, which is, generally speaking, the only kind of rule of thumb about Old Tom Gin is that it's almost always going to be sweeter than London Dry Gin, but not as sweet as Genever, which is the Geneva-style.
That's gin. Really fantastic, unique stuff that is on the cusp. Glad you did the quotes, because it's on the cusp of gin.
Yeah, it doesn't really qualify as gin, but it shares some of those flavors.
Yeah, for sure. The botanical is definitely and I love. It's such a hard thing to find in the U.S.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot of them around here. All right, so this is Purity Organic Gin. It's 43% ABV, so that's 86 proof. And they claim it's distilled up to 34 times. Maybe that's once. Maybe that's sometimes 34. I don't know. But they claim that it has, you know, superior purity because of that, hence their name. You know, these guys are all about distilling too many times because, you know, you can get a pure flavor that way, I guess. And then add a bunch of juniper berries and Nordic berries to it and call it gin. So this, like I said, has juniper, has Nordic berries, whatever those are. Maybe lingonberries?
Cloudberries, lingon.
Oh, cloudberries.
Cloud, gooseberry, lingonberry. There's another berry that's really popular as well. I keep forgetting.
I'm sure there is.
Duckberry, something similar to that.
Gooseberry, duckberry, chickenberry, swanberry.
There are real berries like that, though.
I don't know. I'm just making up names. But this is a gin. I've had it on its own. It's a little sweet, obviously, because it's an Old Tom gin. In this case, I decided to mix it with something. I'm going to top up my refresher a little bit there. This is Fever Tree Sparkling Lime and Yuzu. If you're not familiar with Fever Tree, Fever Tree started as a tonic company. They've since kind of moved on to being a mixer company. They do a soda. They do a ginger ale. They do a line of these sparkling, not really sodas, but not really seltzers. They have an entire range of tonics. If you're into tonic, Fever Tree is about as good as it gets coming right out of a bottle. The only thing that I found that I like more is the tonic syrups that you can get, that you kind of make your own tonic with some soda.
Yeah, those are nice.
This one is just purified water that is carbonated, obviously. Has Mexican lime juice and Japanese yuzu juice added with just a little bit of sugar. This whole bottle has 30 calories, so it's like, that's not a whole lot of sugar. I wonder if it says how many grams are in here. 8 grams of sugar. So that's like,
that sounds about right.
A sip calories. Of soda.
Yeah.
So I just, Fever Tree, everything they make is kind of meant to be cocktail-based and cocktail-focused. So generally speaking, if it says Fever Tree on it, you can just dump it into a glass with some ice and the liquor of your choice, and it'll be good.
Hell yeah. Good name, by the way.
Yeah, Fever Tree is, of course, the name of the tree, the bark.
Yeah.
I can never pronounce it. Kachaka.
Quinine comes from that bark.
Quinine comes from the bark. It's called the Fever Tree because you can chew, like in Africa, where it was discovered, the locals would chew on the bark to get rid of fevers and headaches because of the quinine.
It also repels mosquitoes.
Yes.
Does. I'm not mistaken.
I'm going to take a couple sips of this and see how it pairs with this Solis. What's your first pairing of the night there?
Man, I'm going to take you straight to Flavortown. I can't resist.
I know what it is.
Mm-hmm. This has taken my shelf by storm. And I'm actually really happy about it. You may or may not have seen this before in stores. This is Santo, and this is their Mezquila. Man, I almost said Mezquila. I'm so stuffy and congested, I can't even pronounce things.
Close enough, right?
Sammy Hagar and our good friend Guy Fieri came together and collaborated on a series of tequilas back in 2019. They got together and they thought, hey, let's try to do something interesting and do a 50% blue agave and a 50% Espadin agave. And so, really, right, you have your classic tequila, your classic mezcal, try to put that together. I bought it, truth be told. You know me by now. I'm a cheap date. I like good labels, good product packaging. Really big fan. It's like a painted bottle, and it just has this window that's right. They just taped
That
over.
is really great packaging.
It's very, very, very nice. It also has a synthetic cork. So this would make like a really cool infused olive oil bottle or something, you know, on the shelf once it's empty.
Yeah, it could. Or
It
an
is a pretty
infinity
looking
bottle,
bottle.
or just a, I don't know, fill of sand or whatever from your favorite beach. I don't care.
Or sand from your favorite beach,
Just
I
like
guess.
just a good display bottle. That's what I'm saying.
Ashes from your mother-in-law. I don't know. Something to remember
Yeah,
someone by.
exactly. Exactly.
But yeah, dude, this is wild. So I did mention 2019. Excuse me, I'm starting to crack now. 2019, El Viejito Distillery in Guadalajara is where it's produced, which is pretty cool. You don't see a whole lot of tequila for sure, but not a whole lot of mezcal adjacent stuff coming out of there. And in part, I think is because a lot of the distilleries, we'll call them distilleries for just America's sake, their production of the way that they process agave is different than you would process agave for a mezcal. Traditionally, for tequilas, you'll have a sort of a softer processing, gentle oven experience. It's not as intense as throwing a bunch of stuff into a pit in the earth and letting it just smoke for days. I think 8 days is about average.
Yeah, I believe that's correct.
So I'm trying to think of what I really dig it. It just tastes really good.
All right, so let me ask you some technical
40%.
questions about it. If
Let's do it. Let's.
if you know the answers. If you don't, it's okay. Maybe we need to ask Guy Fieri when we see him in a week and a
Oh
half.
boy. All right.
If we
I'm
get a
ready.
chance to talk to him. So,
I hope so.
Mezcalita, 50% blue agave, 50% Espadin.
Yes,
Are
sir.
they making these two spirits separately and then mixing them? Or are they
I did
using
not.
both types of agave together for the same process? Do you have any idea?
So I don't. I could
Okay.
not find a single damn thing.
I mean, that's pretty typical of these like bigger companies. They want to keep their trade
It
secrets.
happens. It happens a lot. But I would say this. Just by smelling it, I can say that they're mixing, they're processing separately. There is no way to get
Because
that
you're getting that
tequila.
smoke, right?
This yeah, I as far as I know, there is no way to get that smoke quality without actually processing it as if it were a mezcal to some extent. Oh boy, excuse me.
So it's nice, huh? You seem to be
So
a big fan of this stuff.
I bought it as a goof, as a joke. I thought, all right, I may like it, I may not like it. I don't know what a mezcal is supposed to be. I really love that this is, if I were to suggest a mezcal to somebody, and I wanted people to get into mezcal and they're kind of apprehensive because mezcal is, we call it the scotch of agave to an extent. I would recommend this because it has the smell of it has the kind of the flavor profile of the smoke. But it doesn't have that bitey edge that a lot of
Kind of
mezcals have.
rolled back on the volume a little bit.
The volume is certainly rolled back. The butteriness from the tequila helps a lot. Absolutely helps a lot. And that's actually part of the reason why I wanted it as my first pairing. I wanted some of that butteriness to sit with the sort of the initial, the gentle spice sweetness of the first third of the cigar. What I guessed would be, having never smoked this before.
Yeah, this is my first time smoking it too. I will say I'm pretty happy with the cigar. It's kind of right up my alley. It's very elegant but spicy, intense. Has those habano flavors that you're looking for with the spice, and then has kind of this full-bodied core with the Dominican filler. I'm impressed so far, and it's working well with my sort of cocktail here. Is it a cocktail if it has two ingredients? I'm not sure. You might need a third ingredient, like a garnish or something, to technically make it a cocktail.
That's a great question, actually. I'm not entirely sure. I feel like I felt so confident when you asked, and then by the end of the question, I thought, oh, you might have a point.
I mean, I have no idea. I've never really considered that before. I kind of
Well, you
feel
know, you
like
have.
if you're just putting two things
Yes.
together, is it
It
really a
is
cocktail or
a
is it just a...
cocktail. I think the fourth element of the garnish is a optional thing, as long as you have your dilution, your spirit, and your secondary flavor, whatever it may be, like an
So is my
additive.
dilution the ice here? Okay.
Yeah. It would be. I
All right.
think cocktail folks out there, I think, will crucify me or not for this one.
Yeah.
I'm all protected because I got my, you go. And my
Got your
Santa
Santa.
with me. Come at me, bro. I got you.
Warding
One
off
thing
the
I did
evil
want to
spirits.
say, yes, what I wanted to say is tequila is a, for those of you that don't know, tequila is a special type of mezcal. The distinction there being that it's made exclusively from, so two things. The first thing is exclusively from blue agave, generally, which is considered the Weber agave fruit. And the other part is that it can only legally be made in order to be officially called tequila in one of five states of Mexico. And I have the list, but man, those names are hard to pronounce. Oh
I
boy.
don't think I could name any of them off the top of my head. I'm not
You
sure what the five
know at
states
least
are.
one. You know at least one of them for sure.
Is one of them Oaxaca?
No, that's Mezcal
Okay,
territory.
that's what I thought.
Yeah.
Will you attempt the list for me?
All right, I'll attempt it. Let's try this. Jalisco, we know that
Jalisco,
one.
yeah.
Guanajuato, hopefully I didn't butcher this. Michoacan, I'm pretty sure is the correct
Yeah, I think
pronunciation for it.
so.
Nayarit, something like that.
That's one I
And
have. That's the first one I haven't heard.
Tamaulipas,
Tamaulipas, yeah.
Tamaulipas,
Look, you got your
Tamaulipas.
little thumbs up.
It's what?
You had your little thumbs up emoji.
Oh, did it come up?
Yeah,
Boom.
it came up because you were kind of holding your cigar
There
like
we go.
that, or
Great.
like that, I think.
Well, Zoom, I think if the AI says I'm good, then I think I got it.
The AI confers. Yeah,
So, how's
this
the gist going for you?
I think it's working really well. I like that one of the things that I was thinking when I chose this pairing or this cocktail, I guess, was that this gin is very sweet compared to most gins. So I've had it with just a normal tonic before, and to me it's kind of a little too much sweet on sweet. This sparkling lime yuzu is not super sweet. It's kind of, it's got a little bit of sweetness, but it's pretty dry. It's not as sweet as like a tonic or a soda. It's about maybe a third of that. So I think it's working really well. That balances out the gin really well. And those citrusy flavors from the lime and the yuzu work really well together. And they brighten up my palate for the cigar a little bit. And they give me that little bit of acidity to cleanse my palate a little bit. Yeah, and it's working really well with the cigar. I find it kind of brings out the bready notes of the cigar a little more.
Yeah, I was just thinking about mine as well, and I think for me the spice, and again because I'm drinking a neat spirit, so it makes sense the alcohol, 40%, is going to bring out more of that spice quality to it. But it changes the retrohale completely in a very interesting way. So that's where I get the bread, like very intense bread notes
Yeah.
on the retrohale.
And I'm still getting that kind of like that gingery bite with those baking spices that reminds me of one of those super spicy
Man, I want
ginger
some of those
snaps.
cookies now.
Good
I want to
luck.
get
They're
some.
hard to find this time of year.
Not if you special order it for 30 euro something shipping, right, from
That's probably
Finland.
true. That's probably true.
Ask me how I know.
How's the mezcalita? Mosquito? What is it
Mes
called?
it's a hard it's hard to say. Mes See, now you got me messed up. It's mezquila. It's a
Mezquila. That's the word.
mezquila. Mezquila. I'll tell you what, I'm not going to reveal a whole lot, but I'm going to say I'm working on something special with this specific mezquila, this specific product. I'm working on something unique and interesting, and if it works, everybody will find out. If it doesn't work, then Trip will find out and will suffer through it with me.
All right. Sounds good to me.
But yeah, I think it's going really well with with a cigar. Again, tequila, great choice. If you're not a mezcal person and generally you're smoking a cigar with this kind of tobacco profile to it, tequila is probably, especially if you are a tequila drinker, is probably going to be a good choice for you.
Kind of getting to the final bit of the first third here. Man, the spice intensity on this thing is there.
It's
It's
surprising.
Very in
It's
your
very
face.
surprising, right?
Which is surprising because it tastes to me like it's like a very elegant cigar that's not super in your face flavors, other than that like spice and the baking spice. Like the
Yeah.
peppers, the spice, the ginger spice, all of those are very intense. And you gotta kind of be really listening for the rest of those flavors in the background there. The
So,
sweetness, the breadiness.
terms of LFD, if we may do a quick hot take moment, in terms of LFD, do you have a favorite outside of the Andalusian Bowl and, things that are hard to get?
My first Andalusian Bowl was about a week ago.
Oh, no shit. Wow. All
I
right.
hadn't had one. I had been completely unwilling to pay $35 for one, and it seemed like every time I found
It's
one, it was 35
hard.
bucks.
Yeah.
I recently found a local shop that has some real gems, like for exactly what they should cost. It's a little hole in the wall place, and I picked up some rare pinks. I picked up an
It's the best
Andalusian
kind.
Bull or two. They got good stuff that I was actually able to find for reasonable prices, which is nice.
Yeah,
Anyway.
mine is La Volcata.
Oh yeah. La Volcata is
That's
a good
what
one.
I big fan.
I've always been a fan of the Double Ajero. That's like that classic LFD profile. I absolutely love the Coronado,
Oh yeah.
which to me has always been, it reminds me a lot of if LFD made their own Opus X.
But
I
that's
don't know
also
if that's what
Lajero
they
forward,
intended.
isn't it?
Yeah.
It's got a Lajero, heavy Lajero in it. Yeah. That's nice.
But I think my favorite line from them is the LG line. Lito Gomez Diaz, the small
Yeah.
batch, I can't remember what the other ones are. The Oriental was one of them. They had an LG chisel for a while. There's been a whole line of LGs over the years. Most of them have been fairly limited edition, but it's coming back. We're gonna find out in about a week and a half what the new ones are gonna be like.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm very excited.
I'm very excited for that line because that has always been my favorite line from La Florida Minicana. I smoked one when each of my kids was born, which is, it's got
That
a
says a
special
lot.
place, but. It was more about the cigar than like just grabbing a cigar. Like, it's more about the flavor of the cigar than it is the memories I associate because of that. I just love that cigar. Anyway, let's move on to our second pairing here.
Yeah, man.
I decided to go with something kind of interesting, I think, that I've had sitting around for a little while. This is Oak and Eden. I forgot I had
Damn,
this.
we haven't had that in so long.
It's been at least a year and a half, maybe two, since I've even
Easy.
cracked this bottle open. It's been sitting in the back of my liquor cabinet,
20 shows at least.
at least. So maybe 3 or 4 years since the last time I had it. But this is Oak and Eden. This is the fired French oak. I'll get into that in a second. But Oak and Eden, they're founded in Roanoke, Texas, by Joe and James Gildenzorp. These are two brothers who, one of them's the business guy, one of them's the whiskey guy, and they came up with this concept and decided to see how it would do. And so far, it's been doing pretty well. I think they have some kind of patent on it, but I'm not really sure. But their concept is, I don't know if you'll be able to see it completely on camera here.
Was it the spire?
The spire, yeah.
Yeah, I've always liked that a lot.
There, you can kind of get
It's a
it
nice
there.
touch.
So their whole thing is, and I've heard when I talked to them. So I was at, well, I was going to finish the story before I got to this, but when I met them in 2017, when they launched the brand, Chris and Kyle from Ezra Zion Cigars, the owners of our former Operation Cigar Federation. They are investors in Oak and Eden, so they had me fly down for the launch party when they released the first batch, and I got to spend a lot of time with the Joe and James, It was very cool. I got a bottle of, I can't remember what he called it, but it was James's baby that he had come up with a blend of like four or five of their different products, and it was exactly what he wanted it to taste like. And it was kind of his private reserve, which I thought was pretty cool. But so their whole thing is that they use MGP source spirits, and then they add these wooden spires using different kinds of wood, different kinds of different levels of char on the spires. Some of them are aged, or not aged, but they, what's the word? I guess you could say they infuse the spire, but they really just soak the spires in.
Yeah, maybe it's a rested kind of thing.
Coffee, wine. I think there's a couple other ones. I think there's a honey one. There's a bunch of different things that they can do because, you know, once you have an idea like this, you run with it. So they've got a bunch of cool different finishes they can do. This is kind of one of their couple of classics that are pretty standard bourbon fare or whiskey fare. This one is the weeded, what do they call it? Wheat and fire? Wheat and spire. So it is a weeded bourbon from MGP, which then they use heavily fired French oak to soak in it. Their normal bourbon has American oak in the spire. They had mentioned plans when I met them, and I read a little bit, but I couldn't find any information on if and when it's going to happen. But they had talked about making their own distillery at some point. I think it's just kind of a long-term goal still.
That's how it's hard, man. It's even when you have the money, the getting through all the permits and all the applications and all the other things that need to happen just before you can start producing. And then once you do start producing, it's a really awful process from what I understand.
Yeah,
definitely very hard. And money is not the only thing that you need for that.
Yeah. It's a very long involved process with lots of regulations and people who need to sign off and government officials and all that stuff. It's a pain in the ass. I know that much. I've never obviously gone through it. But
have you seen the news lately about MGD?
No.
MGP. They are suing because they were starting to build a new facility in Kentucky for storing a lot of their barrels.
Mm-hmm.
Massive storage facility, and it got blackballed by the local community for whatever reason. So they're suing the, I think it's the construction firm or whoever else, or the city, whoever they were working with. And it's a big fiasco. It's blown up pretty quick.
Very interesting.
It was a couple of days ago.
There's something else I had to add here, but now I can't remember what it was. Ah, so the spire, as you would expect, having that little spire in there causes some extra aging. But according to what they say, the aging takes place over about 30 days, and then it's more decorative. They say it will add additional smoothness over the course of time. And I have noticed this spirit is significantly darker than it was when I got it. So it definitely, there was definitely a little bit of that effect on the whiskey. I don't know if the flavor has changed because I haven't taken a sip in at least a few years off of this.
I would venture a guess, and I would say the way that sounds to me, and a little bit that I understand about wood and surface area, it seems like what happens is the longer the spire sits in there, the more whatever impurities may be there, whatever harshness around the hard edges, start to get rounded out by the wood absorbing that. So you get initially you get the wood,
that may be
the wood flavor is imparting something to the spirit, and then because basically it's not much surface area, it's the rest of it is just absorbing anything else that could be, you know, making it sharper on the palate.
Yeah, we'll find out shortly. The last thing I have to say is that this is 90 proof, 45% ABV. Yeah, that's about all I've got for it before I take a couple sips here and see how it pairs with the LFD Solis. What's your second pair in there?
I want to take you back to your, not your motherland, but your most recent home, I suspect. 1988, Ashland, Oregon. Does that sound familiar to you?
I mean, I know Ashland. I can't think of anything founded in 88.
Oh, boy. It's going to be a spicy one, I think. It's going to be a little divisive for some people. Rogue Ale was founded in 1988 in Ashland, Oregon. And in 2006, they launched, this was the first expression that they released, which is their Dead Guy Whiskey. This one is ocean aged, as they say. Not any detail, of course. We have no idea how they mean that, but it's ocean aged in oak barrels for at least 2 years. So probably 2 years on the dot.
I never knew they were founded in Ashland. I always thought they were founded in Newport, which is where their main brewery is.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. So they started in Ashland as a very small operation. And I think Newport is where the where their permanent home became.
Ah, very cool.
And, you know, kind of an interesting thing. This particular whiskey is it's very curious. It's very, very curious. Let me show you the bottle. It's got the Dead Guy. So this is using the same malt profile as the Dead Guy Ale, which they're very famous for. This is nice.
Yeah, I like that.
It's a cute little thing. I like it. Nice looking bottle. I got this as a gift a couple of years ago and never really did anything with it and kind of forgot about it and recently found it on a shelf.
Nice.
But hey, let's do it, right?
I'm curious to see what you think, because the last time I had their whiskey, I was very unimpressed. But that was really when they first started making whiskey, I think within the first couple of years.
Truth be told, the first time I had it, I hated it.
Okay. So maybe it is still about the same. Okay.
Really, really, really. Absolutely hated it. There are some things I do want to bring up though about Rogue in general, pre-spirits industry when they were working in only in beer. They were known for making a lot of interesting beer, certainly some good, some bad, obviously, but they had their own proprietary yeast for the longest, as long as I can remember. Even when I got into homebrewing, they had their own yeast, which was Pac-Man, which is a really fantastic, super hearty strain.
And just a great name for yeast, right? Like Pac-Man, it's, and how it was could it get better?
Purposely picked because that yeast, whatever you throw at it, that yeast will eat right through it, man. It just deals really well with temperature change. It deals really well with different kinds of sugars and breaking things down well and cleanly and not producing a lot of off flavors despite all the stress. So good for them on that. The politics, we'll kind of stay away from the politics. People can decide, but Rogue has been in the news for other things that perhaps not great. But back to the spirits. I don't know. I don't know if it's the cigar. I want to say that I like it more. Part of it is the flavor profile. I really didn't like the flavor profile initially. The other part of it was, what does this aged at sea thing mean? We've seen this before.
Yeah.
And even that was kind of loose.
I wonder if it's, so they're right on the docks in Newport. So there's like this little touristy area. They have a bunch of docks right down there with a bunch of restaurants and stuff like that. But a lot of the fishing boats head out from there. I wonder if they send it out on fishing boats or if they just have it on a barge that sits out there on the dock.
This is exactly what I was going to say. Yes, this is exactly what I was going to say. I think it is a seal island that they put a bunch of barrels on.
There's a shit ton of seals there.
That's what I'm saying. It's a seal. A bunch of seals are laying on top of these barrels, pissing and shitting themselves, and then, you know, sleeping and farting, and then the natural essence of the ocean plus all of that imbues a particular flavor. That was how I felt about it initially. That was my, you know, flash forward to today. I haven't had it in probably a year and a half, 2 years maybe. And I like it more than I remember. And perhaps I was a little harsh on it initially. But again, I didn't smoke a cigar with it. So I think...
Yeah.
This likely, and we've seen this before, perhaps the spirit with the cigar is the ideal way to go, where the spirit by itself may not be as good, even in a cocktail. I don't know that I would put this in a cocktail.
The whiskeys that I've had from them, I've had just the Dead Guy whiskey, the same, I mean, not the Aged at Sea one, or the Aged at Sea, is that
they have a couple of Dead Guy whiskeys now.
I just had the OG Dead Guy whiskey, and it was incredibly light. Like, it reminded me of if you mixed, Maker's Mark 50-50 with vodka. Like,
water and
very, very light. Yeah, that might be a way to put it. And then I also had their single malt, which I felt the same way about. It was just very light in flavor. Very too mellow for me. And too, it tasted watered down, which, you know, most of the time, like, this is cut with water. As almost all whiskey is, 90% of the whiskey you see is going to be cut with water. But you still have like a level of flavor that matches up to what you expect. And the rogues that I had did not.
Yeah, I jury's still out just for the whiskey by itself, but I think I'm warming up to the idea of having it with a cigar, and I'm willing to try other cigars with it as well. And I think this one is working surprisingly well with it.
Nice. Maybe I'll give it a try someday again, because I know it can be found around my neck of the woods now. So the
As long as you get it
Okanagan,
for free.
what?
As long as you get it for free, I wouldn't pay for it.
Yeah, I don't know how much it costs these
I got a
days.
half bottle right here, man. You can have it.
All right. So about Okanagan, I think when they say that you are not getting any influence from the wood after it's on the shelf, pretty much, I think they're saying that for FDA reasons or BTAC reasons, Bureau of BTAF, BATF. I think that they don't want the misinsinuation that they're adding more flavor than they are, or something like that, and they don't want to get in trouble. Because this has changed a lot. There's a lot more, like, of that kind of resiny, bitter wood kind of barrel note. And then there's a little bit less sweetness than I remember in this whiskey. Like it really does taste like an older whiskey than it is. I know all of their whiskeys are at least 3 years old, which is probably about what this was when it went in the bottle. It really tastes like kind of an old and crusty whiskey to me. So I think
Old
if
and crusty, I like that.
you know what I mean, like an old dusty barrel that got forgotten about and it just overaged a little bit. Which I kind of like that profile, of like that.
I do as
I
well.
like that, like, bitter, resiny, barrel bitter is what I always call it. And this has a lot of that. It's really good. Going really well with this cigar. I think other bourbons might pair better with this cigar just because this one has like that intense smoothness and barrel bitter at the same time. So I'm gonna move on to my last pairing and see if that's any better or any different, as far as pairings go.
I'm excited to see what you have. I didn't look at the, I didn't see the picture, so I don't know what
I
you
didn't
have.
do a picture this time. All right,
Oh,
I
you
did a
didn't.
picture, but it didn't have my actual pairings yet.
Out of the goods. Now, all right, secret time.
Yeah. I gotta make a little pour here. This is I found out in the last couple of months that this has become somewhat of a controversial spirit.
Oh, no.
So this is Diplomatico.
How is that controversial? Good or
Diplomatico
bad?
Reserva Exclusiva. I'll get to that.
All right, sorry. Very interested.
So Diplomatico rum was founded in Venezuela in 1959. This is their Reserva Exclusiva, which is kind of their core brand. Obviously, I mean, not obviously, but as most people know with rum, they don't have regulation around aging or age statements. So what they say is this is a blend of 80% heavy and 20% light rums, whatever that means. I think it probably has to do with the proof of the rums or just the distillation process.
I have a thought.
Go ahead.
Is this an industrial versus agricultural thing where they're blending two different
Yeah,
types?
that could be, yeah.
Could that be the distinction?
That could be.
Just wondering. It might be.
That would make sense. And they're aged in small oak casks for up to 12 years. This is 40% ABV. It, like, very shockingly, I could not tell the difference between my rum and my whiskey if I didn't know which was which.
Yeah, it is dark.
All right, so on to the controversy. I would believe it, and there's been a lot of people who say that this is I can't remember, there's a term for it, but a rum that, because of those lax regulations on rums, they don't have regulations like whiskey where you can't add stuff. So you can add flavors or sweeteners or colors and stuff like that to rum without getting in trouble. So this is one of the rums that I find is most often cited as one of the ones that they're adding sugar and vanilla flavor.
Interesting. I haven't heard that about them before, and I've been drinking Diplomático for a while.
I know
A long
it. I hadn't heard it until the last few months. It was,
shit.
I think it was about a maybe a year ago or so. The last time I had it on the show, maybe, or maybe I was just doing research for it when we were on somebody else's show. I don't remember, But I remember looking into Diplomatico a little bit, and I found a couple of, not accusations, but a couple of opinions that it was being sweetened. Some whole articles about it. And then today when I was doing my research, I was just kind of looking around at articles, you know, with facts, history, and stuff like that. And several of them, the first comment was somebody saying, I recently had this rum, and I think they're adding sugar or molasses or something like that.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, I find it really interesting. Nonetheless, I think it's a very good rum. It is, I would believe that they're adding something sweet to it because it is
sweet.
It is one of those very, very sweet candy-like kind of rums that you don't come across that often. I think my cigar completely went out. I don't remember the last time I picked up my cigar even. I've been talking too much. What's your final pairing of the evening here?
What is my final pairing? Oh, yeah, that's what it is. Let me grab a bottle for you and show you. I am going into...
Ooh-wee.
Ooh, there we go. A lot of glare going on. So hopefully you can see that. That is the Straight Rye Rare... Wow, it's so hard to say. Rare Release. A lot of R's. Can't do my R's. Look at that pretty bottle. Yeah, man, this is the Rare Release Willet Straight Rye. It comes in... This bottle comes in at 55.3. And I say this bottle because these are, they do a hand selection and hand pour, and there's going to be some, because it's cask strength, there is going to be some discrepancy in, you know, certain bottles.
Pretty much all Willet, except for the Pot Still Reserve, is all single barrel. So it's all going to have variation in flavors and strengths. And man, you love to see it. Sorry, go ahead.
I'm a big fan. I'm a very big fan. And they haven't been around as long as I actually thought. They've only been around. The family's been around for a long time in the U.S., but they really started the whiskey business in 1936 in Bardstown, Kentucky. And they started as a family-owned distillery, and they, to this day, as far as I know, are still a family-owned distillery, which is really, really cool. But as we know, in the 70s and the 80s, things were kind of shitty for a lot of businesses producing spirits, not just in the whiskey era, but even beer was struggling for a while. So they switched from producing whiskey to ethanol. Remember that gasohol fuel stuff?
So race really, car like, fuel, basically?
Yeah, pretty much. But in the 70s, they banked all this money on producing this gasohol stuff. And guess what happened? Petrol prices went back down. And they were like, well, fuck, we have all this shit that we changed, all this equipment that we changed. Ooh. Right, to produce this stuff. And so slight loss for them, sure. They shut that operation down in the early 80s.
Interesting.
And they really, it took them a little bit of time to recover, to get back to really kind of the Willet that now we know of, that we've experienced, certainly for our age demographic, I'd say. So this is a straight rye, as I mentioned. Minimum 51% rye could be, you know, usually you're looking at like 80s generally. So it's got to be aged for a minimum of 2 years. The only distinction here, I shouldn't say the only distinction, a couple more key points here. It must not include any colorants, any flavorings, any kind of additives other than the rye, right? The mash and then the alcohol. Water in the cases of non-cask.
Yeah, of course. That's a cask strength. So there's no water added, which is always appreciated. If you want to, you can add your own water.
I love it because a lot of the cask whiskeys that I really love have that chewy quality to them that sometimes we associate with sherry cask aged spirits.
Mm-hmm.
They're really nice chewiness to it. And if it's aged less than 4 years, it has to indicate the age on the bottle, which is cool. I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a fun fact. And I didn't realize also they own a lot of different brands. They kind of do this what's the CIA thing, the shell company. They play the shell company game.
Play the shell game, yeah. What other brands do they own? Do you know off the top of your head?
Noah's Mill is one that I was like, dude, this is crazy. I love Noah's Mill. So they do produce, it seems like they do a lot of that contract bottling stuff, and they have a couple other brands on top of that don't have the sort of made at or made by Willet. They don't have that distinction on the bottles. Like no.
Well, so I actually know. I'm trying to. I believe this is. Man, I have too much whiskey knowledge in my head, and it like sometimes it bounces around a little bit, and I'm not 100% sure this is Willett that I'm thinking of. I believe Willett, at least until a couple of years ago, if not continuing until now, the only stuff that they're bottling in their own facility is the bottles like the one you have right there, the Willett Family Reserve.
I believe
everything else
facility is
sent to a separate facility for bottling.
Yes. Yeah. I did read about that as well. I forget the name of the facility or the location of the facility, but they have at least one, but I think they actually have two separate facilities where they manage the storage and then the bottling.
Yeah.
Which makes sense. I mean, as you grow, you run out of space, and we see this happening with a lot of companies as they start expanding.
Yeah, of course.
Distribution is just easier when you have multiple facilities across different states. You have at least a little bit extra coverage.
Yeah, for sure. All right, on to the Diplomatico for me. This is pairing pretty well with the cigar. I find Diplomatico kind of goes with any cigar. That very sweet, very molasses-forward kind of... It doesn't remind me of the note that I would call hard candy in like a scotch. Like, you know that hard candy note that reminds you of like Werther's Originals?
Yes. And yes. Stuff.
It doesn't quite remind me of that. It reminds me more of like syrup, maple syrup or something. It kind of has
this is like a Malta. Similar to Malta for me, at least.
Never had Malta.
Damn.
My bad. but that sweetness I find works pretty well with this cigar and works with just about every cigar. But it is kind of a acquired taste, I think. This is the type of rum that I think of when I used to not like rum. This is what think of, where it's like, it's very sweet. I've since obviously come around to it, and I enjoy those sweeter ones on occasion. But I thought this is what all rums tasted like when we're supposed to taste like. Then I tried Florida Caña, and my whole world changed. I've since found a ton of other whiskeys that are fantastic in that kind of slightly drier side compared to this one. But this works really well with the cigar pairing. It's working really well with this cigar pairing. I do find my gin and lime cocktail and the Oak and Eden worked a little bit better than this, just because the sweetness kind of overpowers some of the delicate flavors in the cigar that I was talking about.
Yeah,
so
I can
all
see that.
I really taste is those more intense spicy flavors. How's your final pairing working? That Willett.
I'm actually just doing a palate cleanse from our good friends at Liquid Death. Not sponsored, but maybe one day.
One can dream. A girl can dream.
Right? Yeah, that's right. My last pairing, I think it's fantastic. Again, the chewiness from the cask, really great. Coming in 55.5 or 55.3, you would think it would be a lot hotter, but it's not. Certainly with a cigar that, again, I thought, man, this is not going to be that intense. It's not going to be overly spicy or complex. And certainly the spice has been popping out the more that I go through the cigar. Spice is really popping out nicely, and it's sitting really well with the viscosity of that whiskey.
Yeah, I'm loving this cigar. It's got that, like, it has those flavors you expect from Ecuadorian Habano, those classic, a little bit of sweetness, kind of like powdered sugar kind of sweetness with some black pepper and baking spice, but then it also like really rounds that out with those I think pretty strong Dominican tobaccos from the Gomez.
Yes.
Yeah, this is a great cigar. I can understand why Coop put it on his top five or at his five spot.
Absolutely, for sure can see that.
I'm gonna need to get some more of these for sure. I don't smoke enough La Flor Dominicana these days. I'm just going back through my pairings real quick here. Man, that barrel bitter on the Oak and Eden is very intense. Not for
I bet, though. Man.
I really taste that char. Which again, I really like that like experience of licking the inside of a whiskey barrel. You know?
It is nice. A lot of people find that off-putting, and I get why. It's a very divisive kind of thing. I personally love it as well. Big fan.
Yeah, I'm a big fan. I think shockingly for me, I didn't expect this. the Purity Gin 34, Old Tom Organic Gin from Norway. That's a fantastic pairing. I think I just nailed it with the sweetness of the sparkling yuzu lime with that gin, like balancing out that sweetness a little bit, makes it work really well with this cigar, especially because it kind of works as both a pairing and a palate cleanser, which I like a lot.
Yeah, then that's something that oftentimes is overlooked with gins or gins with some kind of a tonic, or to what you have, it's basically a tonic with some fruit. And the yuzu is a, I think personally, it's a great, great way to cut through a lot of the kind of the complexity of what a gin normally is.
Yeah.
So you can experience those flavors in different parts of your tongue, which is really nice.
Yeah, I think so too. And I just really like the yuzu flavor in it. I think it's great. What's your pairing of the night? Or have you figured that out yet?
It's hard. It's so close. It's so close with this mezquila and the Willet. I'm gonna go with mezquila.
Yeah.
And I love the Willet. I love the Willet passionately. It's fantastic. But I never thought buying this bottle that I would be this impressed and this curious by the profile and finally having this really cool middle ground between tequila and mezcal, and saying that sincerely and not saying it as like a hokey pokey, you know, shill of a thing. Keep in mind, bottle is $55 MSRP, $55, $57, depending where you live. Jersey price, so maybe for you and maybe cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm gonna go with this mezquila. I think it's worked so well with the cigar and the spice of it. The spice of the cigar and the butteriness of the tequila profile has been really cool.
Nice. Yeah, I'm looking forward to trying that. At whatever point I do. It sounds fantastic and right up my alley. And I can see it working really well with a cocktail, I think, right? Like,
I think there are some
serious cocktail options with that stuff.
Oh, I'm really hoping. We'll see. We'll see how I'll keep you posted on my secret cocktail project.
All right.
All I need is a centrifuge. It's coming.
And this cigar, I'm just blown away by the cigar. I think this is one of my favorites that I've had from La Flor Dominicana. It is a little bit reminiscent to me of like the Coronado and the LG, like I was talking about. Like it has that where it has the flavor of a medium bodied cigar, but then it's like amped up, you know? Because a lot of times a full bodied cigar doesn't usually have like a Habano wrapper and those flavors you get from a Habano. But I find I really like when a super full bodied, full flavored cigar has those kind of flavors. So you're kind of getting a mix of like the medium bodied and the full bodied. I'm a big fan of this.
I'm really digging this cigar.
I'm
even smoking slower, which perhaps an even better thing, better indicator that I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah. I'm like halfway through the cigar now.
Yeah.
I'm shocked by how slow I've smoked it too. Or maybe it's just a slow burning cigar. All right. So, a little bit of housekeeping. I'm looking at my my tracker for the cigars that we have coming up next. I'm seeing I definitely need to do some shopping, but for the moment,
I think we both did.
What are you thinking on the? I'll put it up to you between the Murcielago Oro or the Charter Oak Pasquale. What do you think?
I really did want to try the Pasquale, but certainly we can leave it for a future show. Let's do the Murcielago.
All right. Murcielago Oro it is, the TAA exclusive from our good friends over at Espinosa Cigars. Really looking forward to smoking that one on the show. I've smoked it a bunch of times, and I'm a huge fan of that blend and that cigar.
I need more of those in my life. That's my personal take.
Me too. And this is going to be our final show before PCA 2024, the return of Let's Get Pairing. I mean, it's going to be Let's Get Pairing's first show, but it's the return of the two of us to the PCA floor, which we're very excited about. Can't wait. So we'll get into what our expectations are and stuff on our show.
Yeah, it'll be exciting.
When we smoke the Murcielago Oro. Before we get going for the night, any other thoughts on the cigar, thoughts on the pairings, Dennis, before we get to one more thing?
Damn, I have to say, once again, I got to say, if you see this bottle on the shelf somewhere, this Mezquila thing from Santo, just don't, like, overlook all the hype and the whatever, the packaging and everything else. Just if you can afford it, if you, you know, want to buy it, try it, give it a shot. Because even if you don't like it, guaranteed whoever comes to your house to hang out and visit, you will likely find someone that will love it. So it's a win-win. Put it on your shelf. Have it for your friends. Definitely try it if you can.
Man, my local Total Wine does not have it. I'm now aware. All right, well, I guess that brings us to one for the road. Dennis, you want me to go first or you got one?
I'll let you go first. Mine is a little spicy.
All right. Well, mine is shit. I think I might have done this one already.
Oh, RoboDoc. Yes, everyone should watch it.
Did I already do what went wrong? Podcast.
No. Maybe last week. I don't know. I'll do it again.
No, last week I did RoboDoc. What went wrong? If I didn't already do this and you haven't already heard this, continue listening. If not, skip forward 25, 30 seconds. And get to Dennis's. What went wrong is a podcast I cannot stop listening to. It is a guy and a girl in the film industry. The girl works at IMDb. She kind of does interviews and writes articles and stuff. The guy, I'm not sure what his day job is, but he's directed a movie or two. And they talk about movies and just how incredibly difficult it is to make a movie. Even a great movie is hard to make. A terrible movie is just as hard to make and takes just as much work as a bad movie or as a great movie. And they kind of go over, they pick a movie and they do kind of all the horror stories that happen between the conception and the release of the movie. So they've done they've done the, what I would call the heavy hitters of this segment, like the Twilight Zone, where, some horrible things happened because of John Landis, and movies like Poltergeist that had all of these controversies around them from before they came out to after they came out during the production. It's a very interesting podcast. They're very funny people, and it's just a lot of fun to listen to. So I recommend you go check it out, add it to your podcast feed, and check out What Went Wrong.
That reminds me of the podcast, what was it called? How Did This Get Made?
Yeah, it's kind of a similar podcast with less of a comedy angle and more of like a behind the scenes.
More info? Yeah, that's cool. That's a cool thing.
I do love How Did This Get Made.
It's great. Really, really great. Because a lot of those movies, they cover that. I distinctly remember Con Air, Tango and Cash. They did Double Dragon, which is one of my favorite films of all time.
Yeah, that's a good movie.
Which is a shitty movie for anybody that doesn't like it.
I mean, it's a good movie as far as like...
It's so bad, it's good.
It's fun to watch. It's not a good movie. It's just fun to watch.
Super fun. Super fun to watch. Agreed. Yeah, my one for the road is we're in March. You know, we got March Madness coming. We got St. Patrick's.
Today's Mario Day.
Today's Mario Day. Absolutely. Forgot about that. Leprechaun, the series. 8 films of madness. I have a favorite, and I'm curious what your favorite is, but you tell me first, and I'll tell you what mine is, because I have a quote from that movie.
I have not watched them all, admittedly.
Okay. That's fine.
But I was shocked by how good the recent one was. I can't remember. Was it just called Leprechaun?
Oh, the most... I didn't watch that one either, to be fair. Fine.
That one I thought was pretty good. I thought that one was a competent movie. It was... bizarre and hilarious how they either, I'm not sure whether they re-recorded Jennifer Aniston's voice for it, and or not re-recorded, but like just took her lines from older movies, from the
dubbed
first
over.
One.
Yeah.
And dubbed them into the movie, because there is like a sort of cameo of her.
Yeah.
Or if they had like a voice impressionist, because she's absolutely not doing that kind of movie ever again.
But they had
her voice in it again, and I think it was somebody imitating her. Which makes it even funnier, I think.
Interesting. That's fantastic, man. My of the ones that I've seen, my favorite is Leprechaun 3. Because, hey, Vegas, baby.
Oh, that's the Vegas one. Okay.
We're going back to Vegas soon. So Yeah, dude, there was a scene, there was this ridiculous scene in this movie. Listen to this. Leprechaun says, "Your boobs are big, your butt is small, but you're still in for quite a fall."
And then he pushes her off
Classic.
something.
Yeah, it's a classic,
Love it.
just ridiculous slasher comedy. It's kind of scary, you know. As a kid, I saw the first Leprechaun. I thought, "Fuck, this is terrifying." Because what's his name? The actor, shit, I remember his name. Warwick Davis.
Warwick
He is
Davis.
terrifying. He's terrifying without makeup.
Yeah, it's true.
That man can hold a face and scare the shit out of you. So, definitely fun movie. Check it out if you haven't seen it. It's a little silly. But apropos, it's March. We're going to Vegas. Hopefully, we'll see the Leprechaun somewhere.
Hopefully, we can only hope, you know.
That's fine.
All right, everybody. Well, I guess that brings us to the end of the show. We'll talk to you next week when we smoke the Murciélago Oro from Espinosa Cigars. Thanks for hanging out. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. I know the podcast numbers have been starting to trend up a little bit, which is great. So thanks to all of those of
Pumping.
you who are listening. We appreciate it. As always, I'm Tripp here broadcasting from the Casa de Monte Cristo studio. And Dennis, what's our catchphrase this week?
Hey, y'all. We want you to drink better, but we want you to drink less.